Welcome to the Strang Report with Steve Strang on the Charisma Podcast Network. This episode was produced to discuss and address issues within our nation and around the world from a Christian worldview.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Strang Report on the Charisma Podcast Network. I'm Steve Strang. The world of journalism and communications, which is my world, has changed enormously, as everyone knows, and my guest today has had a front row seat in seeing these changes from the world of academia, but he also has a very interesting background and has worked with me on a nonprofit board for many years. We're going to talk to Dr. Will Norton today. You're going to want to hear what he has to say after this word.
Dr. Bill Hammond, the founder of Christian International Ministries, is considered to be the pioneering voice of the modern-day prophetic movement. In his 61 years of ministry, he has trained and equipped hundreds of thousands of saints and has personally prophesied to leaders of nations. He spent his life training people to hear the voice of God, and because of this, their world has changed. You can also change your world through Christian International Ministry, their products, and their events. You'll be equipped to hear God for yourself and others, your role on earth as a believer, your purpose and destiny. You'll receive a wealth of revelation and insight about hearing and receiving the voice of the Lord. For more information on Christian International Ministries, visit their website at christianinternational.com. Again, the website, christianinternational.com. And thank you, Dr. Bill Hammond, for sponsoring this podcast.
Welcome, Dr. Norton. It's nice to have you on my podcast, and thank you for serving on the board of Christian Life Missions for all these years. That's how I first knew you, because we both consider Robert Walker, the founder of Christian Life Magazine, a mentor.
Oh, he's a mentor to a lot of folk. We're just lucky to have known him, both of us.
That's right. He started Christian Life Missions, Christian Life Magazine. He died at 96, and in his day, he was one of the strongest people in Christian journalism and shaped a lot of the things that we take for granted today. And you worked for him very early in your career. Tell me about that.
Well, I was at the Chicago Tribune, and I knew that that wasn't going to be my life. It was in sports, and I was more interested in some other things and wasn't that good, I don't think, to really do well at the Tribune. I went as an internship to work for Walker during the day, and at night I'd be at the Tribune, and one day he asked me if I'd come work full-time for him. I considered him really an inspirational person. He saw things outside the box, made a lot of decisions you wouldn't think a person would make, and I sort of described him as a swashbuckler. In some ways, he could have been on a pirate ship, you know, no holds barred. And when he met Jesus, that changed his life.
Well, I can remember as a young journalist looking up to him, never knowing that at some point I would also work with him in his retirement years and kind of carry on his work. He lived to be 96, ripe old age, and he's been gone now 8 years, and he's not remembered that widely, but I think it's appropriate today to give him credit for what he did. And he also started Christian Life Missions, which is now 60 years old, and you and I both have the privilege of serving on the board. And Christian Life Missions was an opportunity for the readers of the magazine to give to worthy causes. What are some of the things you've seen over the years that Christian Life Missions has done?
It was one of the leaders in getting people to understand the role of media in missions. And actually, because of my involvement at Christian Life, I met a fellow who worked in the Christian Life building in Wheaton, and I got him and my father together. My father was dean of the Wheaton Graduate School, and together those two, with the help of Christian Life Missions and Tyndale House Publishing House, started a graduate school of journalism, which produced journalists all over the world who were leaders and who happened to be Christians. Unfortunately, the just past provost at Wheaton ended that program, but it was a special program that tied missions and media together, and I think that concept came out of discussions that my father and Robert Walker had. I would think that would be one of the biggest things. There's something we should probably talk about Robert Walker. You know, he was ahead of his time when it comes to how stories ought to be written. He dictated the stories he wrote into a dictaphone machine, so they were oral accounts. that was at a time when everybody wrote out stories, and so his stories were conversational in many ways, and I think that was way ahead of his time, and that's just one of the ways he was ahead of his time. He also was ahead of his time by realizing that missions and media can go together.
That's right, and let's talk a little bit about your father. He served for a number of years on the board as well, and he was dean at Wheaton, which you mentioned, and now you have followed in his footsteps in the sense that you're dean of the College of Journalism at what I think of as Ole Miss, the University of Mississippi in Oxford. And tell us a little bit about your odyssey where you went from being a secular journalist, then working in Christian journalism, and then getting into academia.
Well, I had a difference with Robert Walker over a Christian life. I thought it ought to be a multimedia company, and I was really brash and stupid about continuing to push for it, and I just sort of lost heart and left abruptly from Christian life and got a PhD. And when I was finished with my PhD, the economy was not doing real well. I could have quit my PhD and gone to a couple of positions, but I decided to finish the PhD and ended up at Ole Miss, which produced a lot of really outstanding alumni. And it's been a place where we've been able to encourage students to go way beyond where we were. I don't have nearly the talent that my former students have. I'm so in awe of where these people who came in as freshmen and then graduated, where they've gotten to be a Pulitzer Prize winner at the New York Times, a senior editor for Standards at the New York Times, a managing editor at Fortune, Shepard Smith at Fox, Sharon Alfonsi with 60 Minutes. These people are just an inspiration to you. It makes you feel good that you had a chance to know them when they were young and see how they developed.
And congratulations to you for the impact you had on their lives. And then your career took a turn when you left Ole Miss and then went up to the University of Nebraska to become its dean. That's one of the best journalism schools in the country.
I was really fortunate. I had involved the dean at Ole Miss in helping us shape our program, and we shaped our program at Ole Miss after Nebraska, and Nebraska produced all these great writers through the years. And I was fortunate. I happened to be there at a time when many of the graduates of Nebraska were now thinking about getting back into education and leaving the profession. So we hired the news design editor of the New York Times, a leading investigative reporter for the Miami Herald, and the senior producer for World News Tonight with Peter Jennings. And we were able to hire those people back. So in many ways, because of what Neil Koppel had done, we were able to see the college rise to another level because of the quality of those graduates and what they brought to the classroom.
And now you've come back to Ole Miss, where you're dean and a professor, and the world of journalism has changed. I don't think there's many journalism jobs as there used to be. Enrollments are down a lot of places, but your enrollment is up. What have you done there at Ole Miss that the other people haven't done that's made you so successful?
I'm not sure that we've done anything differently. We write to every student a handwritten letter, every student who's admitted to our program. We have an emphasis on multiple platform journalism, that it's paper, it's audio, it's visual, and then all the new media. And we've started a degree program that's called Integrated Marketing Communication. And most of business now is done in new media, 80% of business that's done, and it's selling. And so what we've tried to emphasize is entrepreneurship and selling, and that you don't limit yourself to one medium. You look at all the various media, and you try to get students prepared in every one of those media. And we've just been fortunate because the market has gone down, and we've gone for not just PhDs, but we've gone for people with significant media experience, and they make a huge difference. Someone who's been there, who's actually done it, they do fabulous things in the classroom. They can tell people, now you write it this way, not that way, in this particular situation. You write it that way, and not this way. We've won 3 Kennedy Awards in the last 6 years. I don't know of another school that's won more than 2, and a lot of schools haven't won any. So we're really happy about that.
And congratulations for that. I couldn't help but notice your use of the word entrepreneur. You know, I went to another journalism school in North Florida, University of Florida, and I don't know that I ever heard them utter that word the entire time I was there. As I recall, they prepared me for my entry-level newspaper reporting job.
The world has changed.
The world certainly has changed. We typed on manual typewriters The personal computer had not been invented. We could not have envisioned the internet. And of course, the world has changed. But if you're an entrepreneur, if you work for someone, that hasn't changed.
No.
A lot of people just want to work for someone, get a paycheck. They're upset if people are laid off. I have created a job, I like to say, by God's grace, not only for myself, but for a lot of other people. And there are opportunities in journalism that people could pursue. Just give me your opinion about that.
You're an entrepreneur. You clearly are an entrepreneur. You're steadfast and not contained by foul lines. You look at all the possibilities. You don't just stay in the sandbox. I would have to say the best example of this is a former student of mine who was editor of the Daily Iowan when I was getting my PhD, and I was the publisher of the Daily Iowan. His name is Louis Dvorkin. He runs Forbes, and he tells me, he says, there's not a distinction any longer between the person who works for a company and does public relations, but he really does it journalistically, and a journalist. The only difference is who pays the person. So those people who write stories for corporations, they write them as good as they can journalistically, but they're paid by the company to write them. And if they're really good, they write some of the bad things about what they're writing about, not just all good things, so that the story is believable. And journalists do the same kind of thing, but they're paid for by media. So what we have is at Forbes, $75,000 a month a company will pay to have access to their website. That's entrepreneurship. Forbes was dying, and this guy came in and sold Forbes his company, and then Forbes put him in charge of building a company that was multimedia and traditional at the same time. It seems to me that's the future. Most journalists now that you look at that are writing for corporations are under contract. They don't get benefits necessarily from that. They have to be their own company. And I think that that's the new world that we live in. And it's not as secure a world. But some of the people that write for Lewis, they make more than $100,000 a year because he pays them based on how many hits they have on the website.
That is a different world, isn't it? And, you know, we have just scratched the surface of the wealth of information you have. If somebody wanted to find out more about you or your journalism program at Ole Miss, how would they contact you?
Well, we have a website, so if they Google Meek School, it will come up. We've been fortunate. We're at a university that puts an emphasis on having a beautiful campus. So our enrollment has gone up from fewer than 500 majors 7 years ago, 6 years ago, to more than almost 1,500 majors now. And they're coming from all over the country. And that's just really an exceptional occurrence. That just doesn't happen in this day and age.
Well, thank you for stopping by our podcast studio to share with me on my Strang Report podcast on the Charisma Podcast Network.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Strang Report with Steve Strang. To read more from Steve, visit his blog, The Strang Report, on charismamag.com. Again, it's The Strang Report on charismamag.com.
This has been a production of the Charisma Podcast Network. Steve and Joyce Strang are the founders and owners of CPN. Dr. Steve Green is the executive producer of the Charisma Podcast Network. We intend to honor God with every podcast and remain thankful to our advertisers and supporters who make these podcasts possible.